OTB's Mount Rushmore. 32 counties. One county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
And I was seeing teachers who had never expressed any emotion whatsoever lose their mind when Sonny was running in that home straight, trying to catch that gold spot.
Others are controversial.
Mayo's greatest celebrity fan now helps him earn his place on Mayo's Mount Rushmore is Kevin Kilbane.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
George O'Connor, 17 summers in purple and gold.
And catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7.30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio. The OTB Podcast Network.
Whether you're from Cushendall in Antrim or Mount Sinai in Waterford, this is what it's all about.
And get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free, ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power.
Remember sport? That thing you used to love? It's back.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
I'm prepared to anything I can. Well, do it then.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should there be an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
You're welcome along. Busy football show for you this evening. Later on, we'll have Jonathan Roach, Shamrock Rovers chairman, with us to discuss the restart, League of Ireland restart, July 31st. Some controversy about the decision-making process. Shamrock Rovers, the only club in the Premier Division to vote to proceed with the new schedule, 18 games, still two relegation spots. We had a Sligo Rovers treasurer on last night and he was not best pleased with how things had gone down. So we'll talk to Jonathan Roach, Shamrock Rovers chairman, this evening. Andy Mitten will also be with us very shortly, editor of United We Stand. But Premier League evening continues. West Ham against Chelsea. We mentioned a few moments ago West Ham had taken the lead. That was disallowed. Antonio ruled offside and there has been a goal. Nigel Bidmead is there.
West Ham 0, Chelsea 1. The goal coming from the penalty spot on 41. Christian Pulisic brought down and Willian scored his ninth goal of the season. The penalty coming just after West Ham had a goal from Thomas Suchek ruled out for offside by VAR. Chelsea heading for third in the table. Very nearly half-time. Chelsea lead 1-0.
That's Nigel Bidmead at the London Stadium. Three other games on this evening. So we had Bournemouth, who are second from bottom and on a terrible run of form. They lost 4-1 at home to Newcastle. That was one of their more winnable games at the moment. They have a tough schedule upcoming. So a 4-1 defeat for Bournemouth this evening at home. Elsewhere, Arsenal at home to Norwich. Well, made things look very routine. Andrew Cheel was at the Emirates.
It's true, Norwich's Ben Godfrey hit the post with the game goalless, but with his teammates trigger-happy over the self-destruct button, anyone who thinks it would have made any difference is kidding themselves. Krul and Drimmich both handed easy goals to Aubameyang, sub Suarez marked his Arsenal debut with a goal, and Xhaka was also on target. The result is just what Arsenal deserved, and sadly, the same goes for Norwich. Arsenal 4, Norwich 0.
Leicester City, thus far since the return post-COVID without a win, they went to Goodison this evening. Shane Pennington was there.
Leicester have picked up many plaudits for their performances this season, but their form seems to have deserted them as they head down the final straight, with a Champions League spot now not looking all that certain. It's now just 1-8 for Brendan Rodgers' side after goals from Richarlison and a Gylfie Sigurdsson penalty gave Everton the win. It's 1-5 now for them as they kept their Europa League hopes very much alive. Everton 2. Leicester 1.
Now, I've been told to go back to the London Stadium. Nigel Bidmead there again.
West Ham United 1, Chelsea 1. Chelsea taking the lead from the penalty spot on 41. Christian Pulisic brought down and Willian scored his ninth goal of the season. But 5 minutes later, Thomas Suchek has headed in a corner. And it was his goal just before the Chelsea penalty that was ruled out for offside. An element of justice. West Ham 1, Chelsea 1.
Here we are, second half to come from the London Stadium. In the meantime, let's go to Andy Mitten, editor of United We Stand, whose work you'll also read in The Athletic and elsewhere. Andy, good to talk to you again. How are you doing?
Good to talk to you. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Are you in Spain or the UK or where are you at the moment?
I'm sat overlooking Barcelona, and I've just had a coffee with a young man who won the Premier League playing for Leicester City, and he's from Manchester. So work that one out.
Very good. And I wanted to ask, we were talking Barcelona last night, they drew 2-2. That is a club in crisis. Are you getting along to the new camp at the moment? Can you go?
No, we can't. It's restricted to just 6 journalists, and I would not be in the top 6 in the pecking order because I don't write for a Spanish publication. So it's a little bit frustrating because I would tend to go to 20 to 25 Barca home games per year, and you know, I can't do it. I can't do my job properly. I can go to games in the UK, but there's a quarantine issue there, but that's set to relax, so I should be at Villa Park next week and then at the FA Cup semi-finals. So I found myself working as a journalist, doing it from TV. In some respects, it's easier. The press conferences are all done from home and straight after the match. The manager just sits in front of you and you can ask him questions. But I'm somebody who goes to games. I go to 85 to 90 games per season, and I don't usually watch much football on TV. And I realise the vast majority of people do watch football on television. So it's been a new one for me, and a big change, as I'm sure it has for most people, and not just people who write about sport.
Do you find you have less of a feel for the game watching on television?
Yeah, I've always written a lot about fan culture, and I got into journalism by starting a fanzine when I was 15. So when I'd normally go to a match, I would speak to fans outside. We're really sort of quite proud that we're on the street and we're mingling with people, and we're there, we're visible, we're not anonymous and online. We're at matches around the world, wherever Manchester United play, or when I'm not doing my United stuff, I'll travel far and wide. I feel that you really get the proper story when you do that. And that's why I travelled to Sinaloa to see Maradona a year ago. It's why I started this season going undercover with Lazio's ultras. They're pretty dangerous people, and I would never have got the story that I got if I hadn't gone to Rome and, you know, sought to meet these people and to gain their trust and to write about them. That's the type of journalism that I do. In some ways, I've got reliable Wi-Fi. I've not got wind interrupting what I'm doing when I'm recording a podcast. There are definite advantages to sitting on your sofa and watching. And I've interviewed a lot of players over Zoom, etc. I didn't even know what Zoom was 3 months ago. And I feel like I've had some decent interviews. And when I watched Manchester United last night on television, I was really impressed by what I saw. And friends of mine colleagues of mine who've been to the stadiums are saying it's awful. Well, the last game I was allowed to go to was at LASK in Austria, and I didn't like it. I hated it for many reasons. And I know it's become sort of trite to say football without fans is nothing. It isn't nothing, but fans are a huge part of what football should be about.
So we wanted to check in and see what you made of United post-return, post-project restart, and obviously they were good again last night. Before someone texts in to say it, I'm just going to say it. Norwich, Sheffield United, Brighton is not exactly the scariest of trios. At the same time, I think on United's last 3 visits to the Amex, they have not come away with 3 points. They have been vulnerable to a team like Brighton or any other Premier League team. And they are, you know, Sheffield United and Brighton in particular, it was the second string against Norwich, but Sheffield United and Brighton in particular, Andy, they are starting to make these games look a bit easy and over after an hour. And that's not something United have been in the habit of doing for a long time.
No, but there's been a significant improvement, and nobody's getting carried away. Manchester United are still 5th in the table. Liverpool won the league at a canter. United have not put a proper title challenge up since Alex Ferguson left the club in 2013. But when you consider how low the team have been at various stages this season, as low as 14th before the game against Liverpool in October, there's been a big improvement since January, a month when United lost 4 matches. The last time they lost was the game against Burnley at Old Trafford, and the vultures were circling them. And there's been a bad move pretty much from the end of last season, which finished terribly, partly because of the club's inability to do what you say and break down some of the teams who are lower down in the league table. But they seem to have cracked that, and it's not just going away to Brighton, where they'd lost every previous visit to the Amex Stadium. and winning convincingly and playing well and counter-attacking and seeing incredible performances. They've beaten Manchester City. They've beaten Chelsea twice this season. Beaten Manchester City three times this season. So Solskjaer is getting results against the best teams, but now he's starting to get results against the teams who are lower down. And there are several reasons for this. One, and I spoke to him at length during the lockdown, I feel that he's getting on top of the job rather than the job getting on top of him. Bruno Fernandes is a significant factor. Everybody knew he was a good player. He's turning out to be a fantastic player. Mm. He's lifting the performances of those around him. And then maybe the situation that led to Paul Pogba thinking, I'm not going to move on, I'm going to stay. He's a great player. And he's had a bad season because he's been injured, but he's playing better. He looks happier now. The team's winning. So you've got this virtuous circle where the confidence is improving, the enthusiasm levels are high, the vast majority of the players back the manager. Solskjaer gave me a very good quote, which was taken up by virtually everyone, which was, I'd rather have a hole in the team than an asshole. And he's got a point there, and you can see what he's trying to do. And he feels, and he told me after the Manchester City game in March, two or three new players. And then Manchester United would look like they'd have a serious side. But it's not just the headline stars, it's not just Bruno and Pogba. Rashford had a decent season, maybe not post-lockdown. Mason Greenwood, 18 years old, fantastic opening season. Nemanja Matic, I interviewed him pre-season in Singapore, and I went on Twitter and said, I've just interviewed Nemanja Matic. And you could feel the tumbleweed. It was like, who cares? Yeah. Nobody's bothered. Yeah. And even late September, I went to Solskjaer's hometown and spoke to his best friend. Nobody cared. When I tweeted that I was there, there was more abuse than praise. These people are now central to Manchester United's resurgence.
Yeah, I must be honest. I thought Matic had just been written off and it was finished. He just reappeared one day and looked quite good again. And now he's doing very well at the base of that midfield. That was an interesting line you had there, Andy, that you're now of the opinion that Solskjaer's on top of the job rather than the job being on top of him. What prompts you to say that? What feel are you getting from him?
I feel like he handles pressure well. Even when things were bad, I didn't see many cracks there, but I feel he's becoming increasingly assertive in what he says to the media. He's more confident in his role. Results help that. It helps you build up a bank of credit. You've not got the wagon circling, which is what happens when results are bad. And I can remember speaking to the Stiff Station on the morning of United against Tottenham in December, and the line was very much, if they don't win tonight, what is going to happen? And I said on that rainy morning, whatever you say about him, he's got a habit of pulling out results when he really needs them. And United did beat Tottenham, and then they beat City away. Solskjaer told me that was his best moment as Manchester United manager. But then, of course, they lose to Watford, who's won 1-17 in December. The team had not been able to get the consistency, which they're now getting on this unbeaten run, beating all the teams that come before them. And there are little stumbles. Manchester United were not impressive against Norwich on Saturday in the FA Cup, and that maybe shows that the squad isn't as strong as it could be, because when he starts the players on the bench, they struggle to overcome a team like Norwich. And Jose Mourinho was praising the strength of United's bench a few weeks ago at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Not a lot of United fans would fully buy into that. And they would say, well, why is Andres Pereira playing 37 times this season? So I think there does need to be some strengthening done this season. But United are in a better position than most clubs to do that.
I know you talk to people around the club. United fans had probably over the last 7 years become accustomed to some very so-so signings, and Ed Woodward and the transfer policy has been much discussed. Did Solskjaer, did the scouting network, did they know what they were signing in Bruno Fernandes, or have even they been a little bit surprised?
They knew what they were signing. I think they would have liked to have signed him at the start of the season, but United had signed Bissaka, Harry Maguire and Dan James. And you would think if Fernandes would have joined the club at the start of this season, then they wouldn't be thinking, can we get into fourth and hoping that Leicester City lose matches. But that's how football is. It's full of what-ifs. I put it to Woodward in October when he gave us that interview for United We Stand. And I said, what on earth is going on with the scouting system? Because it has been less than impressive in the previous 7 years. And he went on this big monologue and he explained what was going on. And it was greeted, not surprisingly, with some scepticism. But the recruitment under Solskjaer has genuinely been good. Signing players is not an exact science, but United are getting signings right. And I remember at the end of January, I got word that Odion Igalo was going to come to Old Trafford, and I put it out there on Twitter. And I look back at the responses a few weeks ago, once again, so-called Manchester United fans, completely negative. Why on earth are we signing players from China? Why are we signing Watford rejects? He's scored in every single game that he started. I'm not pretending that Igalo is Lionel Messi, because he's not, but he was brought in because Marcus Rashford was injured. He's brought in to do a job, to be a backup. And he's done that job, and he's doing it really well. And around the club, he's very popular, he's very smiley. And when you're getting players who want to be there, who love being there, then that is the opposite of players who maybe aren't happy there, who are a poison in the dressing room. And there's been several of them, and Solskjaer feels that he's got rid of them. He won't name them, but I think everybody knows who he's insinuating. About some of the players are now playing in Italy, and I don't mean Chris Smalling. And it's a happy club, and you're seeing that with the results.
Mm. As ever, Paul Pogba's much discussed. He certainly looks happier on the pitch, you know, and I suspect the Fernandez effect is good for him as much as anybody. He's looking around now, and this is a team he can play in and flourish in, I suspect. Do we know what his intentions are? Do we have any indicators what his intentions are? It would seem the club very much want to keep him.
Yeah, I cannot categorically say that Paul Pogba wants to stay at Manchester United and see his contract out. I spoke to him. I know people who were very close to him. I think the messages which came out a year ago absolutely indicated that he wanted to leave the club, and he thought that the dream had been sold when he chose Manchester United over Real Madrid in 2016 had not been realised, and he had his arguments. But you also had maybe 30% of Manchester United fans saying, let him go. No person is bigger than the club. He really divided fans. Especially the match-going fans, a lot of them really were not having Paul Pogba up until quite recently. But you know what football fans are like. He's come back, he's playing really well, he's smiling. I thought he was fantastic in the first half at Brighton, and pretty selfless as well, setting up Fernandes and covering a lot of ground all over the pitch. And he'll be advised that football has changed as well, and maybe there's not a queue of clubs waiting to pay the type of money Manchester United would require if they sold him. Mm. And they don't want to sell him. They want it to work out with him. He's still a brilliant world-class player, and if him and Pogba can spark, and him and Fernandes can spark and do well, then that's a great prospect for a lot of Manchester United fans.
Martial and Rashford are both 19 goals this season. Kenny Cunningham was on last night. He was just keeping an eye on the game last night for us, and he reckons Greenwood could be the best of the three. But Martial with his hat-trick against Sheffield United, I don't know if you're watching the TV coverage, but afterwards he made a point of saying, I think the goal where Rashford pulled the ball back for him, he said the manager's going to be really happy with that goal. And then Solskjaer, about 15 minutes later, came on the TV and made a point of saying how we're on at this guy to get in the box more. You know, he's such a talented player, he can drift anywhere, but we want him in the box, that's where he's going to score the goals. And it was interesting, you know, they had the same perspective. He clearly had been getting through to Martial. You know, you say Pogba's a bit divisive amongst fans. Martial is that player as well. I mean, you just know if they ever let him go, he'd turn into a superstar because there's so much talent there. And yet, you know, they've been waiting for him to come through for a while now and really deliver consistently. He seems to be in a good place in particular.
Yeah, he was fantastic against Sheffield United last week. Part of the issue was Martial really looks up to Paul Pogba. They're both from Paris, and Jesse Lingard does as well. And you had a situation where the main man in the dressing room, Paul Pogba, wanted to leave the club, and that's not healthy. Can you imagine Roy Keane in 1998 wanting to leave the club? It wouldn't be good. It's something that Sir Alex Ferguson would have done something about, and Solskjaer had his hands tied a little bit there. Martial is exactly what you say. He's hugely talented. There's been times where he wanted to leave the club. And his manager, Jose Mourinho, was happy for him to leave the club.
Mm.
But I think Ed Woodward was the person who said, no, this is not going to happen, taking advice from what he calls the football experts within the club. Rashford's a great player as well. And I think both of them, with Greenwood, it's pretty exciting. But they would need backup, which is what Ole Gunnar alluded to this week. Rashford's not come back scoring. I mean, everybody absolutely loves him for the stance he took in helping people less fortunate than himself during the lockdown. He's also been working on his positioning, getting into better positions. I don't think he did it as much at Brighton, but I saw evidence of it when he set up the two goals against Sheffield United at Old Trafford. He just needs a few goals, but I think that Ollie wants him to be a bigger team player as well, and I think it's not just about him scoring goals, but of course he's a goal scorer, he's a striker, he wants to score goals, he wants to be player of the year, he wants to have that sort of selfish aspect to his game where it is about him, but Solskjaer is trying to make it about the team, and I think you've seen a lot of that as well.
On Rashford and like the amazing kind of thing he did under lockdown, like so often, and I'm sure we're all guilty of it as well, even the most bland or banal comment from a high-profile sports person on anything political or social is built up into something profound, and it's generally not, you know, but we have this kind of halo effect when it comes to our sports stars. But what Rashford did was so impressive. It was, yeah, he was working out of his own experience. It was a very precise demand, and he did it with intelligence and good grace, and you know, got an unbelievable result. Like a turnaround like that, a U-turn like that, just does not happen ever in politics, ever, especially within 24 hours. Have you spent much time with him? I presume you've talked to people who know him. It just seemed incredibly impressive, and just such a well-meaning thing to do, and he put his neck on the line.
Yeah, all of that is true, and he's a good person, and I know what's going on there. He absolutely is genuine in his belief that the wrongs that are happening in society should be righted. And he's from a part of Manchester which is very close to where I'm from. I know people who he grew up with extremely well. I know whose house he was going round to when he was going hungry. And this isn't built on a lie. This is built from his own experiences. And in all of the things that he said, and don't think he was writing those really well-written social media messages, even though he was absolutely behind the messages. When he spoke about going hungry in post-Commonwealth Games rejuvenated Manchester, that was pretty striking. And it struck a chord with a lot of people. And of course it helps because he's a footballer and he plays for Manchester United, who were a huge club. But the government also took notice as well. And I think he's genuine in his intentions. He could have sat back and done nothing, but he pushed and he pushed. And he's got a very good family around him, and he's a conscientious player. There's been times when he hasn't been happy. Things could have gone a lot better for him when Jose Mourinho was there. Yes, Barcelona were interested in him. Yes, they didn't think, and I wrote the story, they didn't think that United would sell him, and they wouldn't have done. I also remember another United player telling me a couple of years ago. He said, I was at a dinner with Pep last night, and Pep said, the only player I would take from Manchester United is Rashford. And Guardiola knows his business, and this wasn't at a time when Manchester United were doing particularly well either. So he needs to start scoring, of course he does, but he's had a great year, and he scored 19 goals, and that's the most he's ever scored for Manchester United. And I'm sure he'll get some more, and he'll go over 20, and I think that Martial will as well.
All very interesting. Listen, just one last point before I keep you. You've been very good with your time. So, as we said at the outset, I don't think United can get too carried away with themselves. They are still well off the pace that Liverpool set and City set. But for the first time in a few years, they're decisively improving. That second string performance against Norwich, that was an example of where they do need to strengthen for sure. The likes of Mata, who's not getting any younger, the likes of Jesse Lingard, who you have to wonder, you know, really, okay, squad player, but they could do with a bit more quality in terms of squad players of that ilk. What kind of money might Solskjaer have to spend in this COVID world that we live in now? Like I saw, they said they wouldn't pay 50 million for Jadon Sancho, for instance. Is Solskjaer going to be given the money to improve that second string? Because that'll take a bit of time as well, Andy.
It will do, and it's probably the hardest question you've asked me, because I don't think anybody knows what the market is going to be this summer. Economics, it's still a major issue. Manchester United have been burning through £25 million per month, paying the wages, not just of all the players, but all of the staff as well, including all the casual staff, which they didn't need to do. And United will sign in the summer, but they also need to move on some of the players who have been on loan. You know, if you can get Sanchez off the books, even though he's done really well at Rome, you could get good money for him. If you could sell Jesse Lingard too and get decent money for him, okay, he's not going to be the most in-demand player, but I still feel that, and the club certainly feel that, he is a Premier League standard player. And then it's going to test what the other clubs, what their financial situation is. So Jack Grealish, for example, is a player United have been interested in. If Aston Villa stay up, they will have far less reason to sell him than if they go down. Borussia Dortmund are far more stronger financially than they were in 2005 when they nearly went under. But they cannot hold on to Jadon Sancho for too long because his contract could run down. So I think United, I don't think they spend as much as they did last year. And it's also worth noting that Bruno Fernandes' signing came out of this summer's transfer budget. But I don't think we'll be seeing a summer where no new players come in either. And Solskjaer has said it. I mean, he said to me, we need two or three players. And he wouldn't be in the job if nobody wants to see Manchester United finishing fifth or sixth again next season. It's Manchester United, so they need to strengthen, and maybe they can use their relatively strong financial position to their advantage.
Listen, Andy, thanks for that. Loads of great stuff on that. Go on, I've been racking my brains here. Who did you interview? I can't work it out.
I didn't interview him. It's Danny Simpson, the fullback.
Yeah.
He's a Manchester lad. He played for... And he came to Barcelona and got in touch and said, do you want to come and meet up? And so it was nothing to do with work. We just had a nice chat. And I marvelled at, you know, how fast he can run 10K and I can't.
Okay, sorry. I thought he's now playing for Barcelona and I was completely flummoxed. Now I'm with you. Listen, great stuff. Thanks, Emil.
Take care. Goodbye.
Cheers. Great stuff there from Andy Mitten, editor of United We Stand. There's been another goal at the London Stadium. West Ham have taken the lead against Chelsea. They now lead 2-1. They were 1-0 down in this game. They have equalised, and now with 54 minutes on the clock, West Ham lead Chelsea by 2-1. Antonio with that goal on 51 minutes. Back in a sec. Okay, that's enough United for one evening. Now we want to turn to the League of Ireland situation. If you're just tuning in, by the way, West Ham 2, Chelsea 1 is the latest in the Premier League, 58 minutes on the clock. But the League of Ireland situation has been ongoing, obviously, right through this COVID period. The news came through yesterday that the clubs had voted to resume on July 31st. It would be a shortened season, amounting to 18 games in the Premier Division instead of the usual 36. Relegation was going to stay as it was, as in one down, one up, and then second bottom in the Premier Division plays the winner of the promotional series in the First Division. And we thought, grand, we're up and running, that is good. And then a bit of disquiet emerged. So the National League Executive Committee accepted a majority vote. The nine Premier Division clubs, except for Shamrock Rovers, voted against the plan as I've outlined it. They didn't want to go ahead with that. The nine First Division clubs did want to go ahead with it, and Shamrock Rovers sided with them. And so it was a 10-9 split and a 10-9 win, and that brought us to where we are. Now, David Rowe is the Sligo Rovers treasurer. He was on the show last night. He's unhappy with the decision. I mean, it's his opinion that if we're having half a season, there should be half the number of relegation spots for starters. And he was also unhappy with Shamrock Rovers' decision to vote the way they did. Have a listen.
There was consensus amongst nine of the 10 Premier Division clubs that there needed to be some relegation, and the nine Premier Division clubs proposed that there would be an automatic one up, one down. So the champions would be promoted and the 10th team would be automatically relegated. There was, I suppose, an expectation that all 10 would back that. Shamrock Rovers took their own position on it. And then, somewhat disappointingly, when it went forward then to the Executive Committee, there are three representatives from the Premier clubs and two from the First Division clubs. Shamrock Rovers didn't, the representative adopted a club position rather than, you know, the 9-1 than carrying the mandate from his constituency, who had voted him in to represent him in the first place. So that really sided the vote in favour of the one up, one down, and one playoff place. So that's what's happened. And we're disappointed with that. First of all, we're disappointed that, you know, somebody that was elected to represent us has made a decision going against a 90% majority. And, you know, quite frankly, it feels like being mugged all over the place at the moment. Absolutely, they're entitled to vote as they wish on their own club position. But when you're one of three representatives for 10 clubs and that body has voted 9-1 in a particular direction, your obligation is then to follow through. So, you know, we just feel we feel that is a complete misread of why they were there, and they're there to represent the Premier Club Alliance. That's the job, but they took their own singular position. Both the decision and the way it's been decided are really disappointing and like patently unfair. I mean, I know there have been court cases in other jurisdictions of similar decisions. You know, there are talks of boycotts and all sorts of stuff, but I'm not too sure where it's going to go to. But there's anger amongst the nine Premier clubs that, you know, until we've got to. A number of the clubs that might be directly affected are incredibly unhappy. And that really has been added to by the other clubs who may not be in that half of the table, been really unhappy about how the decision making came about and how, you know, a 90% majority suddenly ended up having one of its own representatives vote against, you know, a proposal.
So that was David Rowe. He was in the show last night. And again, he's the Sligo Rovers treasurer. So things are never straightforward in the world of League of Ireland. It would seem today then the news coming through is that the FAI board met this morning because last night a formal complaint was made by Premier Division clubs about the way this whole thing had transpired, and they wrote to the FAI to register their unhappiness. So the FAI board met this morning and they've agreed to review the process with a decision due by the end of this week. And I think that is where we are as things stand. Very happy to welcome to the show Jonathan Roach. He's the Shamrock Rovers chairman. Jonathan, thanks a million for coming on. Appreciate the time.
No problem. Pleasure.
So listen, help me out here and we'll work through this step by step for a second. Can you first explain to me, and I hasten to add, Shamrock Rovers are perfectly entitled to vote whatever way they want in the initial stage of this thing. But certainly it was very apparent nine of the Premier Division clubs didn't want to proceed with the resumption as planned. Shamrock Rovers was the only Premier Division club that voted to proceed. What was the reasoning, Jonathan? Why did you think this was the best deal or the best deal to go with?
Well, kind of first of all, we would have, and I believe we're correct, a completely different take on what I've just heard there from David Rowe from Sligo there. It wasn't a vote. It was nine Premier Division clubs expressed an opinion and were agreed on that opinion that they wanted to send to the NLEC. The nine First Division clubs wanted, which is different than agreed, wanted to remain, or the status quo to remain as is. Then it went forward to the LNLEC. Those nine clubs, actually, a third of them didn't agree initially with option three, which Sligo and Dave Rowe expressed was what they wanted.
Sorry, you've just lost me. Option three. We need to keep this a bit more. You know, I'm just conscious. Yeah. Not everyone like. I don't know what option one, two, three, and four are. So maybe just.
Three clubs out of the nine that expressed an opinion only changed at the last minute.
Okay.
So they had a different. They had a different opinion, and it wasn't a vote among clubs that was to be carried over. It was an opinion expressed by nine clubs that are agreed on that opinion. Yeah. And the first division wanted the status quo to remain. And that was our position never changed from day one, from this 8 weeks ago. We wanted football to come back as quickly as possible. We actually wanted all the games to be played, 27 at a minimum, but understood that not all clubs who expressed an opinion financially couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously it went forward to the NLEC again to correct people. The remit of the NLEC, which the clubs were for 13 years excluded from until last year, and who now are in the majority, the remit in the terms of references is to do what's best for the League of Ireland. It's not to represent Shamrock Rovers or any other club on it. It's not to represent the division. It's not to represent PCA or FDA. It's to do what's best for the League of Ireland. That's what every single person on that NLEC was to do. And the vote was 5-2. It wasn't 5-4 or anything else like that. And every person which the clubs control, the NLEC, had a vote, and they voted to go with remaining with the status quo and to get back to football as soon as possible, which everybody wants.
Okay, so can you, though, explain to me the so you're saying it wasn't an initial vote, the 9-1 Premier Division clubs not wanting to proceed and Shamrock Rovers thinking it was best to proceed. If you, I presume everyone's sitting around having a talk about this, or there's some lines of communication and you're exchanging ideas. Could you, in so much as you can, Jonathan, explain why or what the difference was between how Shamrock Rovers saw the situation and the other 9 Premier Division clubs saw the situation? Like, why did you think this is the idea, this is the best route forward, and why didn't the other 9?
Well, again, as I said, it was 6, and then the other 3 clubs joined them at the end. But what we've seen in any change to the relegation and promotion issues would dramatically affect the competitive nature of both divisions, not just our division, of both divisions. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want that to happen as a club. And we were up front and we expressed that opinion from the start. And when the issue with COVID was the financial package, which we're all suffering from, etc., it was all financial. Relegation has only, and promotion has only come into this the last week or so. We all signed off on financial package that was improved over the time. Everyone's going to lose money. Every football club we see in the UK, Wigan going into administration today in this COVID. And the financial package was to try to protect the clubs and to get back playing football as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. So this relegation thing has only come up in the last week or so once the financial package is signed off. And we believe that the competitive nature of both divisions would be affected by any change in the relegation and promotion playoff. And we're steadfast in that opinion, and we stand over that opinion, and we express that opinion to all clubs in various meetings. And obviously then the opinions were fed into the NLEC, who, as I said, their remit, in terms of reference, to do what's best for the League of Ireland, not for Shamrock Rovers, not for Longford Town, not for anyone else, do what's best for the League of Ireland. And they made that decision and the vote was 5-2.
Yeah. And why don't the other 9 think that 1 down instead of 2 down doesn't affect the competitiveness of the league? Like, David Rowe's point last night was, we're now proposing to play half the number of games, therefore there shouldn't be the same number of teams relegated. I mean, I would have thought with just, 13, 14 games remaining, for instance, the race or the relegation battle is still going to be very, very competitive. Like, this is now become a sprint as opposed to a marathon. And I'm just wondering, if you're sitting around and 9 other teams are saying, well, we think this is the best way to go, would that not be a convincing argument? Like, would you feel, well, maybe we need to rethink our position here if everybody else seems to think the other way is best?
But as I said, it wasn't always the 9 clubs, it was 6, and it turned into a kind of, in my opinion, I think unity is good.
Yeah.
Shamrock Rovers started the PCA, set up the first meeting 5 years ago. But we feel as a club that, like, unity is kind of only deserved when it's properly constructed. And it's not constructed that aimed at screwing other people in it.
Who's trying to screw who? Sorry.
Well, we think if the relegation and promotion places were changed,
yeah,
I think it has a dramatic effect on the first division as well as the Premier Division matches. And we as a club expressed this opinion that we think it would drastically affect competitive nature if only one was relegated automatically and only one club was promoted from the first division, of both divisions. And that, and we think, with the sporting integrity of it, etc., and we have a different opinion from six clubs up until the other day when, as I said, they all agreed as an opinion. And that's where we are.
Yeah, sure. I mean, ultimately, the other three did side with the other six, and that became a nine, and so they all ultimately agreed. So, I mean, look, I mean, the club's entitled to its own opinion. I mean, I'm an honest broker here. I'm trying to figure out what everyone thinks. On the second point, because Shamrock Rovers are entitled to vote for it whatever way they see it, but on the second point, David Rowe has a very different opinion on your remit on the National League Executive Committee. There are seven members. It's to give clubs a voice. As you rightly say, before the reforms came in, clubs didn't get a voice on that National League Executive Committee. So he would put the argument forward, and I can see where he's coming from, that Shamrock Rovers are on it, Dundalk are on it, St. Pat's are on it, that actually when the league has voted 9-1, when the league has voted 9-1, that should be taken into account when Shamrock Rovers are voting on the National League Executive Committee. Yes, you have your own opinion, and you've said it's, you know, our remit to do what's best for the league, but you are also there in part to represent the Premier Division, and he felt that you've misused your position on that committee.
I think he's wholly incorrect. I said, I'm not on the NLEC.
Sure.
As you know. So the terms of reference of the, and he, like, again, I'm not going to get into a flag match with Dave or anybody else.
Sure.
All the clubs should check what the terms of reference are for the NLEC. And it's to do what's best for the League of Ireland. Every independently, each individual member. It's not to do what's right for the Premier Division or for the First Division. It's to do what's best for the League of Ireland. That's what their remit is. They listen to the arguments and the options of vote, I understand, and they made their decision. Just because I don't tell our representatives to vote one way or another, other clubs shouldn't do the same just because they work for them, etc. People who are on the NLEC, which is an effective and will be even more important in the coming weeks with the ongoing issues ongoing, various things that may happen in the league, are there to control the two leagues and to do what's best and fair and use sport and integrity, be independent in their decisions, not what's best for one club or one division. And that's what the decision was made. Clubs are entitled to express their opinion, which they have, and we have, but it's not an ultimatum to someone sitting on the NLEC to go one way or the other.
Okay. So, look, Sligo are going to stick to their version of what your role is in the NLEC, and I hear what you're saying about how you see your role.
To stick to the terms of reference.
Yeah.
People are on.
No, I hear you. They different interpretations of it. But regardless, so we are where we are now. The FAI, I think, are going to look at the situation, review the decision-making process, try and sort that out by the end of this week. They have asked clubs not to get legal in any way because that will just create a mess that nobody wants. Jonathan, how quickly are we to resolving this in a way that Sligo are happy, Shamrock Rovers are happy, the First Division are happy, and we can just, you know, get things moving again? Because there's a lot of players and a lot of clubs very anxious, I'm sure, to do that. Like, if the FAI came back and said, listen, Shamrock Rovers, we sort of think the way things are looking, maybe we should go with just one down instead of two down. Is that a line in the sand that you will not cross, or are you open to negotiation here and a bit of flexibility?
We'll work with, as I said again, it goes back to the NLEC. We won't jump up and down and stamp our feet when we don't get what we want. We wanted to play all our games left in the league. We wanted at least to play three tiers of games.
Mm.
But all the clubs listened to financial issues around it and understood that some clubs said they could only play a certain amount of games. And so the league has been reduced to 18 games.
Mm.
But we want to play all the games. But we're not going to. Mm. Everyone is suffering in that. And the speed of it has been very frustrating for all clubs. And it needs to be agreed on. The board, in my opinion, everyone needs to ratify the decision as soon as possible. I think there's a press release there that there's a board meeting tomorrow. Mm. So some decision has to be ratified tomorrow because we all want to get back to playing football on the 31st of July. I think all clubs are agreed with that. And we've 13 league games left. We have an FAI Cup, thank God.
Yeah.
Because 2 weeks ago, some clubs didn't want to play in the FAI Cup, but now it's happened. And we're lucky enough that we have Europe to look forward to at the end of August.
Yeah.
So this needs to be acted on quickly. The decision by the NLC needs to be go to the FAI board, and they need to be ratified. Or if it's not ratified, I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, that was my final question. So say the FAI look at this and they take the temperature from the Premier Division in particular, and they decide we can't proceed. Too many clubs are unhappy with this. What's the Shamrock Rovers' response to that?
You'll never, like all clubs, as I kind of said earlier, no, all clubs will never agree on anything. That's why the NLEC is there. Like, that's why it's there, to make the best decision for the League of Ireland in the whole going forward.
Yeah.
Not going to please every, we're not pleased.
If the FAI, for instance, think, well, look, it's not tenable to have 9 Premier Division clubs voting against it and 1 in favour. I appreciate the importance of the First Division as well, but if they are of the opinion we can't have 9 Premier Division clubs against the plan out of 10, what's the Shamrock Rovers' response?
Well, I said the 9 clubs expressed an opinion, like, and the clubs changed their opinion over time. Like, we want to get back playing football, as in we're not the ones here stopping anything, or, as I said, going, we're not going to play. There's some clubs has said they're not going to play. I think from the start, players have been let go, etc. From early on in it. We've got to a situation now where there's a financial package, and now we need to get back to playing football. It needs to be, we believe, the status quo needs to remain in regards to promotion and relegation for both divisions to be effective.
Yes.
If the FAI board can come up with something else,
yeah,
like, we want to just get back to playing football as soon as possible.
No, I get that. I get everyone presumably wants that in the main. And if the FAI board say, we've thought about it, we've talked to the 10 clubs, including Shamrock Rovers, we've decided, given that it's half the normal season of 36 games, it's down to 18, we're going to go with one up, one down and leave it at that as a compromise. Is that something you can get on board with?
No, because it won't be the FAI board. It's the NLEC that, again, who the clubs control. They control. If we have 5 representatives from the clubs, there's 2 independents who are mandated to run the league. The NLEC will decide on what, and they have decided.
Mm-hmm.
They've made the vote. The vote was 5-2. 5-2. Unanimous. To go with getting back and to keep the status quo. It would have to, I don't know, to be honest with you, I don't know what will happen if the FAI board don't ratify that decision. And if it was another decision, the other way, if the NLEC had gone with the other way or another option, it would, like, we'd still be playing, we'd still want to play football. We might be happy with it.
Yeah.
Because, as I said, we might think it affects it, but we'd be still willing to play football.
Okay. And just the last one, Jonathan, financially, how are Rovers set up at the moment? I know it's devastating for all the clubs in broad terms.
Yeah, it's devastating for everyone. It's devastating for us. And I've heard David actually on a few weeks ago saying it's all right for clubs with 2 million. We worked very, very hard for our investment from Dermot Desmond and IIU. We built the club over the last 4 or 5 years. We've invested in infrastructure, roadstone, etc. And no one just came along and threw Shamrock Rovers and our members 2 million. They invested in the football club. And it's very, very hard going forward without crowds, etc. We know the League of Ireland is reliant on revenue from crowds, etc.
Mm.
But with the package that financial package that was put on the table, it helped. Obviously, the government subsidies has helped everybody in regards players' wages. We're still playing a considerable amount every week because we have high wages, like Dundalk. We're fully professional. We have 52-week contracts. Our fans have, including their membership subscriptions, have given nearly €80,000 in the last 3 or 4 months. Sligo fans, I've seen yesterday, have a GoFundMe page of €20,000. So everybody across all the clubs are working and fighting their lives to make sure that football comes back, because it's so important to the whole league across Premier Division and the First Division. But it is going to be tough, and I think there is going to be tough days and tough weeks ahead for all clubs.
Yeah.
And players and players just want to get back playing now. They're back training, most of them. So we just want to get back playing.
Well, hopefully it can get sorted out. Jonathan, cheers for the time. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
Cheers. That's Jonathan Roach. He is the Shamrock Rovers chairman. Back in a second.